Hi everyone, it's Aliza Licht here, your host, and I'm so thrilled to share that my new book, On Brand, Shape Your Narrative, Share Your Vision, Shift Their Perception, is out now. I hope you'll pick up a copy because personal branding is for everyone. It's for the new graduate starting out, the middle manager looking to level up, the executive who wants to be a thought leader, the entrepreneur starting from scratch. It's for anyone who wants to pivot or transition into something new. Because having a strong personal brand means that your name gets dropped in rooms you're not in, and that you're thought of for opportunities that other people haven't even heard of yet. So pick up a copy, and I can't wait to hear what you think. Hi, this is Aliza Licht, and this is Leave Your Mark, the podcast, where I brew fresh career advice with some of my most inspiring and successful friends. It's professional advice that you can action immediately, whether you're just starting out in your career or well on your way. With a massive to-do list and a large cup of coffee, I promise that you can get it all done and still have time to post about it. We have such an amazing guest today on Leave Your Mark, Jenny Hutt. You probably have listened to her voice a million times, but she is a real multi-hyphenate, a lawyer, podcaster, radio and television host, author, entrepreneur, influencer, now consultant. She's a founder. Jenny, welcome to Leave Your Mark. I am so excited to have you on, and I was so honored to be on your show recently.
Well, I mean, you're pretty incredible, Aliza. What I liked about talking to you was that doing the research, I had no idea that you were the same person from DKNY 1,000 years ago. And that was just fun. That was just fun to discover and then get to talk to you. And the fact that you were DKNY PR girl, I don't know. I think that's just very, very cool.
I know, but we're talking about you today. I appreciate that because you have had an incredible career. I mean, from back in the day when you co-hosted Whatever with Alexis and Jennifer, then you had Just Jenny for so many years on Sirius, and now you have this incredible podcast, Just Jenny. You are a founder of Bunny Eyes, and we'll get into that later. You co-authored Whateverland. I mean, there's so many things to discuss. In addition to your new consulting area of just like all the things that have now become part of your jurisdiction. But you grew up in this incredible family. And I do think we have to start there because not everyone has the experience that you've had. So tell us a little bit about your family.
Well, I think my childhood was pretty normal, but for maybe the access to go to concerts or meet famous people some of the time because my dad was in the music business. But beyond that kind of perk, it really was pretty regular. My parents were not interested in any of us running around New York City and causing problems and making waves and being naughty. It just wasn't our world. We lived in a suburb of Long Island, where I still live, and it was neat to grow up around talent. But other than that, it was pretty ordinary, I think.
Well, you know, it's funny. I assume that was a conscious decision of your parents, right?
I'm sure it was. And I think my dad, I don't think he ever really thought about it the way my mother probably thought about it, but there was always this feeling of never wanting to disappoint either of them. And I don't know, like I would see kids do things at concerts or do things at events where they would just try to engage with whoever was the performer or whatever it was. And I would have never done that. Like I just wasn't naughty in that way because I didn't want to disappoint my parents. Now, that might be to my detriment, Aliza, because I was such a goody-goody in a sense and didn't really know that it's okay to like stand up for yourself and push open doors. There was almost a passiveness in my behavior as I recall it. Now, maybe it's not even true the way, because our memory can be deceiving.
Sure.
But I was always just super well-behaved and I think I knew that kind of being in a studio with someone like Dolly Parton or Barbara Streisand, that was unusual, obviously. And yeah, I just sort of was always trying to be on my best behavior. So it was pretty normal in that way. And then I guess it was also super normal because my parents, on the one hand, made a big deal of like knowing that people were important or whatever. But at the same time, it was like everybody's a human being. So it doesn't really matter what their job is. Respect talent. Talent was what was important rather than the notoriety.
That is such an amazing lesson.
And then there was one other thing I could say. Like, I remember when I was maybe 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, like that time was probably when the Gettys and the Miller sisters were this thing in New York City, these sort of socialites. We were so not even remotely kind of like that. We weren't rich like them. We weren't fancy and fabulous like them. We were like nouveau Long Island music business hustlers. So they were the kids and young adults that were traipsing the light fantastic. And you had the Von Furstenbergs, and we weren't like them. Like, they were fabulous. And we were like the Koppelmans, like Jewish people from Long Island. Like, it wasn't.
I love that. But I think for everyone listening, just to give you context, Jenny's parents, Bunny and Charles Koppelman. So your father was one of the most celebrated, formidable industry music executives.
Yeah.
Working with, like you mentioned, Barbara Streisand to Prince and everyone in between. Mm-hmm. And by the way, your brother is pretty major too.
Yeah. Brian's great. Brian co-created Billions, and long before Billions, he found Tracy Chapman in college, and he also co-wrote the movie Rounders, and he's done a lot. He's really smart, my brother.
Oh my God. So anyway, you grew up in this fabulous household, and I think your parents are probably a lot like my parents in a way. It's like the Jewish Long Island, and like everything about you feels familiar to me. Mm-hmm. But you actually decided to get a law degree.
So my dad, even though he didn't finish college, maybe he got like honorary degrees years later, really wanted his three kids to go to law school and get law degrees. Now, my brother, when he graduated college, already got jobs and was making money. And so my dad didn't really have a leg to stand on in terms of having him go to law school. Brian ended up going on his own because he wanted a law degree 5 or 7 or 10 years later. And my sister went because he said, go. And then I went, but I was the only one who became licensed because when I had my son, I didn't want to be a practicing lawyer, but I felt like I had to finish what I started.
That's the goody two shoes part of me, right?
Something like that. Yeah. But I didn't have any sort of feelings like I want to be a lawyer, but I think my dad wanted us to have the legal training. So
listen, great thing. So you sort of enter this world of broadcasting. How did that all happen in the first place?
Yeah. So I love this story because I was in the right place at the right time because of my father. And I was assisting him. He had needed an assistant when he went to work with Martha Stewart. And I was a stay-at-home mother at the time. Yes, still a lawyer doing like some per diem stuff, but I was mostly a stay-at-home mom. My kids were 4 and 5 at the time. This is in 2005. And he needed an assistant. And I just said, I remember being around a dinner table with my whole family, and my sister was there. And I was like, you know what, Stacy, you're so good with all of our children. And we all lived next to one another. I said, I'll just do it. And my husband worked in Long Island, so I knew that he would be close to my kids if I was now commuting to the city. And my sister was a stay-at-home mom, and so it just felt right. And I had wanted to get out of the house. Like, I was not the kind of mother that was just happy at home. Now, maybe that's a character defect. I don't know.
No, that's not a character defect.
Yeah, I didn't really feel fulfilled, and I wasn't using my time wisely. I wasn't making sure to keep my brain active. And I felt like I was just atrophying from top to bottom. Mentally, it wasn't good. So I went to go assist my dad, and I met Martha's daughter. And Martha's daughter was set to have a radio show. Alexis was going to have a radio show. And we became fast friends. And then she asked me to do this radio show with her. And at the time, I mean, my father thought I was going to sink the ship. Not because he didn't believe in me, but again, it's that whole like goody-goody mentality. Like, he would never have inserted me in something like that. Wasn't his way. And so I just remember like our first demo, people were like freaking out because it was a little bit raunchy. And my dad was like, this is not okay. And then Martha said she loved it. And then we had this show, and it was really not because he didn't want it.
Right.
But I did. And that was sort of the first time that I started doing something that I really wanted to do. And it was amazing. It was a really incredible 5.5 years. We had that radio show. We had 3 different TV shows, which is so bananas. And then she quit the show and didn't want to be my friend anymore. And then that was that. And I went on to do my own show.
Yeah. And then it was just Jenny, which was amazing. But yeah. I think one of the reasons why you're so loved in your own show is your presence is so authentic and so real. And you tackle things that like people are thinking, but never probably talk about. Your sort of personal brand as Jenny is so open. Mm. And it's interesting because to me, I would think that would be maybe counter to this goody two shoes persona, because you really do say whatever's on your mind.
Yeah. I mean, I think it took me a long time to get to that place. I think that I didn't really feel super at ease in my skin until I started talking on the radio and connecting with people far and wide and realizing that all the things that I thought made me weird were like the same for everybody else. Like everyone is weird. And if everybody's weird, then no one is actually weird. And there's tremendous comfort in that. And so I almost would push the envelope and tell stories and things that I went through. Like I have a lot of anxiety and I worry about everything too much. And even now, 53 years old, when I'll talk about my children online, and I have a really specific way that I believe in talking about my children. It's my perspective and not their stories. I respect their privacy and I'm only allowed to talk about what they feel comfortable with my sharing. And so I really adhere to that. But my experience as a mother is my story to tell. So I'll say things like, maybe it's weird, and maybe again, it's my own character defect or my own deficit. But like, until I know both of my kids have woken up each morning, I don't really function well. I'm a nervous wreck. Like I'm always afraid. And once I started sharing things like that, I was amazed by how many other people are kind of living with the same thing. And again, it's all how you look at it. I don't even know that we're suffering. It's just sort of our existence. So I think there's tremendous power in sharing and in sharing our ish. And I think it's helpful. I think that if somebody listening is going through whatever it is that I've been talking about, then they know they're not alone.
I think you're 100% right. But one of your other admirable qualities is really finding humor in a lot of life's tough stuff.
Always.
Which is kind of, you know, the opposite of what you would think. So like just your outlook on life, like how do you find humor in life's tough stuff?
So my Instagram bio right now says like didn't peak in high school, because I didn't peak in high school. I don't know if I'll ever peak. But I was going to change it to anxious optimist, because it's pretty much what I am. I think ultimately everything's going to be okay. And I've had a lot of things not be okay lately, but I still think that everything is going to be okay. And I think that's because I have this kind of feeling of you can find the funny in every situation. You got to find the joy where you can. And there really is funny in almost every situation. It's maybe not pretty and maybe it's a little twisted, but I don't know. Like when my mother was dying, my sister and I had some of the best laughs. Same with when my dad was dying. Like my brother, sister, and I have always been incredibly close and are still incredibly close. But like, you have to find the ridiculousness of the awful things that happen in life, because the awful things are always going to happen in life. And if you can't find the funny, then what's the point? Like, then we should all get under our covers and never leave our beds. Because what's the point? You got to find a way to laugh, even if you're laughing because there's some cocky doctor that you're just have to laugh at every time you see how cocky this motherfucker is. Excuse my language. If this is a clean podcast.
No, it's definitely not a clean podcast.
Okay, good. But there were so many ridiculous moments that we had through just horrible times. And so you got to find a way to laugh through it. It's just part of what makes me me, I guess.
Well, Jenny, you know that The Anxious Optimist is your next book title. I didn't connect the dots there.
I didn't connect anything. Yeah.
That is 100% your next book title and possibly a second podcast. So I would just get that name everywhere while you're at it.
I will.
So being a public person, obviously, you know, you cover so much on Just Jenny. Mm-hmm. The feedback from the audience.
Well, let me just correct you. Public person light. I mean, in my own little circles, I have some notoriety and people know me, but I'm like a diet public person, like not fully.
I do not think you're a diet public person. I think you're a public person. And I think that you are a well-known person. I mean, maybe you don't think that, but people do. And also people have great things to say about you when they actually say your name or hear your name. And
thank you.
Jennifer Lancaster introduced us, which is amazing, who edited my book.
She's great.
She's great. But I'm sure you've had viewers that are like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that, or disagree. Yeah.
I love my audience. And I have so much gratitude to the ones that have been with me from the beginning, because man, they've gone through it with me. They went through losing my mother. They watched me lose that first radio show that I really cut my teeth in. They watched me lose a lot of weight. They watched me send my kids off to college and become an empty nester. They watched me lose my dad. And they're watching me now in the most tumultuous time I've had in my life so far. And they have been friends to me. I've experienced like this incredible grace of humanity that were it not for kind of the trauma I've gone through publicly with them on the air, I don't think I'd know how good people really can be. So in the depths of my soul, I am just so appreciative to every one of them who's ever sent me a message of either feeling sad for what I'm going through, or even better, ones who are like, that fucking sucks, because that's my language. And the people that don't get me, it's okay. They can go somewhere else and don't have to listen to me. And I'm not for everyone. And I don't really want to be. I just have to be who I am. But yeah, for the most part, people have been incredibly kind to me. And look, there are some people that will hear what I say and get angry with me because ideologically we might be different. But I'm pretty open-minded. And even with that kind of thing, when we get into politics, because our world is so crazy right now, Aliza.
Yes, I know.
I'm pretty open-minded and willing to listen to what other people feel and other people think. And I did that pretty much all along when I had a live radio show, because I'm interested in what makes someone else tick and why they have a different perspective.
You once said that you love the idea of starting each day anew.
Yeah, I do.
How do you, especially when you're having a really tough day, mm-hmm. and you get through the day and it's like the worst day, when you wake up that next morning, what do you tell yourself?
I've said a couple things. One, I do believe in that fresh start, new day mentality. I do, because you can always work to feel better, do better, be better. And that's not from a perfectionist standpoint either. I'm not trying to achieve greatness. Like, there are some people out there that will tell you, like, you can be great. And I'm like, I'm okay with being good enough. Just let me be adequate and let me get through the day without falling apart. Like, that's winning to me. Like, I don't have to rule the world. I just need a good enough paycheck to buy myself a pair of earrings. But the way my physiology works is that I wake up the most anxious. That's the worst part of my day every morning. So I am forced to make a determination if I'm going to face it and deal with it or not. And I have chosen a life where I face it and deal with it. And so I've had to put certain practices into play in order for me to really survive. And that involves making sure I move my body every single day. That sets my brain into a better place. And I don't know what it does for my body. I'm not sure it does all that much, because I don't work out hard. I don't do anything that grand. I just move. But it's almost a constant reset, like a Groundhog's Day every morning to start a new day. It starts the same way. And then by the end of that day and that night, I've exhausted myself so much like a puppy that I can fall asleep even if it's been hard. So it's almost like the reset creates the opportunity for a new day and an opportunity for things to go better than they did the day before. So that's that optimism part.
Is this something that you've taught your kids?
Yes. I think what I've taught my kids is that we can't fix every problem, because we can't. But I do believe that every problem is manageable. And again, that we can always just try to do better with whatever it is that we are working with. So yeah, I think my kids do have that mentality.
When we think about sort of the mantra that you live by, mm-hmm. do you have something that you tell yourself?
So because I'm 53 and grew up watching Oprah, she does say this thing, at this moment, I am well. And I try to employ that philosophy when I start to freak out about something. I try to get really, really present. It does not always work, but I try. And I guess the other thing is that, like, I am a freaking weeble. Weebles wobble, but we don't fall down. Like, that is the very definition of who I am. And I've been saying that for years because I keep getting kicked and I keep getting pushed and I keep whatever. And I won't crumble. I refuse to crumble. So I don't know. I have this very strong fight in me and I don't know that that's a mantra. In fact, I know it's not, but I think my mantra has to be more of a concept that I am unrelenting and I will never give up trying to do whatever is the thing that I need to do in that moment, that thing that needs to get done, which is ever changing.
I mean, that's a very noble cause. I love that. All right. I'm going to take you back to 2012 now.
Sure.
2012 HuffPost. You wrote an article, which I was
I'm a horrible wife. Yeah.
Yes. I am a horrible wife. Are you? Which is like the best title ever.
Yeah.
And it resonated with me because, well, first of all, my daughter went to sleepaway camp. So your kids had gone off to sleepaway camp and here you are, you and your husband, which should be like the best time ever. Right.
Uh-huh.
But then like the panic sets in of like,
oh yeah.
So being that this is going to be a summer episode and there's so many people who have kids that are away, what inspired that article? And in general, how do you feel about either that time in your life or now in general of just like the balance between yourself and what you're doing and your spouse?
Okay. Well, that article came out of, so on the East Coast for sure, and maybe on the West Coast too, there are many kids that go to sleepaway camp. But it just sounds weird when I talk about it to anybody who hasn't experienced this. We send our kids off for 7 or 8 weeks. They go and they stay at a camp, often in the Berkshires or Maine, New Hampshire. And we're left without our children for the summer. And they're away having the time of their life. Like the sole purpose of the camp is to keep your kids alive and happy. That is it. And there are some parents, and there's no wrong answer here and no wrong way to be, but there are some parents that look forward to that summer because they like the freedom it affords them as couples and they get to take a deep breath and do all the things they weren't doing when the kids were home. I'm just not wired like that. So for me, when my kids would go to camp, I hated it. I hated it. I hated it until the moment they walked back in this house. I could not stand it. My babies are my babies. And so my husband, like, I think the way we've always worked as a couple is that one of us can worry and then the other doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And I try really hard not to bring him into my worries, to give him a break. So that article was because when I would hear about people who are like, oh, the kids left, we're going to party and we're going to have sex and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And I was like, but I'm like crying. So we got back and sat outside and I'm crying. Like, there's no party. I'm not naked. Like, I'm curled up in a ball crying and scrolling on the internet. You know, at the time they would post these pictures, very clunky, different from how it is now. It's probably seamless now. But when my kids were in camp, it wasn't like that. And so proof of life, I wanted proof of life all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And also, we've always had like a very real marriage. And I never wanted to be the kind of woman or wife that was putting out something that wasn't truthful. So I never wanted to make it like, at that point, I'd been with my husband almost 20 years. I mean, we're together 26 years now. And I mean, we love each other. Like, I love him and he loves me, but life has stressors and it's not all fun. And we're certainly not holding hands 24 hours a day and having sex morning, noon, and night. So I never wanted to give that kind of myth power because I think it's unfair to other women. And I think it makes other women feel bad about their own relationships. And so that was why I was so open about how I felt. And also to sort of check in, is it just me who feels like this? And of course, it wasn't just me who felt like that. And I think as women, it's really hard when you feel pulled in so many directions. And then what are you supposed to do? Get home and put on a negligee if you just had like a really hard day at work and you're supposed to come home and put on Marabou slippers with a little kitten heel and romp around? Like, it's just not real life.
I agree.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And I love the title. And this is probably a good time to tell you in case you don't know this, because I know we'll talk about your sister in a minute and what you have both created. So my sister and I have a meme Instagram account called homesick.com spelled out.
Oh my gosh.
Where we post all the crazy homesick letters that kids send home to their parents.
Fantastic. Oh my God. I love it.
So it's our summer project. You will love it.
I will love it.
Yes. It is so funny.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about your sister. And you guys are getting your hair colored one day.
Yeah. So, well, the genesis of Bunny Eyes, it's such a funny thing when you have a moment of divine inspiration. And it really is that, because you don't know where it came from. But when I was 44 years old, I had perfect vision. And then all of a sudden I didn't. And my world became fuzzy like everybody's does. And one day I got a lot of blowouts at the time, and I always got my hair colored because I've been gray since I was way too young. And I was so frustrated that I couldn't read when I was getting my hair colored because I couldn't wear my glasses. So this day I'm sitting in my kitchen. I'm so frustrated. And then I just said to myself, why aren't there glasses that I can hold in my hand? And I get this idea in my belly that I'm going to make glasses that you can hold in your hand. Now, it's the most absurd thing in the whole world because I don't make things. I don't invent things. I'm not creative like that. I don't know physics. I'm not an entrepreneur. So 44, my eyes go bad. I tell no one except my son because no one else cares what I have to say. And also, I'm very, very protective of this ridiculous idea. Ridiculous. But because it gave me butterflies, I'm like, I can't tell anybody ever. So cut to like a few months later, my sister and I are both at, now it's no longer in business, but it was Serge Normand, John Frieda in New York City. We're side by side and I look at Stacey, we're both getting our hair colored, and she looks visibly annoyed. And I'm like, why are you so annoyed? And she's like, because I can't wear my glasses while I'm getting my hair colored. And I'm like, stop, just stop. And I told her what I was thinking and she was like, oh my God. And then we started like researching in the chair at the beauty parlor, like, are there opera glasses that are reading glasses and are they made? They are not. And we looked everywhere and there was nothing. There was absolutely nothing. And so she had had a friend who was a mom of one of her kids' friends in school who ran an eyeglasses company. So then we met with her with like a tiny little NDA written on a napkin in a diner. And she was going to China like 2 weeks later. And so she went and had the prototype made. I mean, the whole thing was crazy. We got some patents.
Amazing.
We got utility patents really quickly. And then we launched Bunny Eyes, which are wearable, tiltable, and flippable reading glasses. And we also have prescription compatible frames that are optical grade. And yeah, every one of our glasses you can hold in your hands when you get your hair colored, and you could do like all sorts of things. So like, if you just flip one of the temples, then you can lie on your side and read when you're in your bed.
Oh, that's pretty genius.
Yeah, I do that every night. Or if you're sitting on your couch and you're watching television, you could tilt the front of the frame and watch TV and look at your phone at the same time. So they're multi-use.
Isn't it crazy when you have an idea, like even in the process of the research, you must have been like, surely we missed something.
100%.
Like there's no way that you just thought about this. Yes.
Still. And like the fact we have 2 utility patents, a design patent, other patents pending. I mean, I still don't understand how no one had done it because I'm not that smart. Like that's not my area of expertise, but my name is on a US patent. So it happened.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And it's Bunny Eyes with a Z. We named it after our mom, Bunny. I love my company. I love my glasses. I'm obsessed with them. They're all I wear. And yeah, I'm very proud of it.
Oh, well, you should be. But now let's talk about this little embarkment into consulting, because so you have so many people coming to you.
Yeah. So like you, Aliza, we all have things that we're good at, right? And then things that we're not. Like I will never run a marathon. It's not on my list of things I need to do. Zero interest and also couldn't do
zero.
It. Right. I can't jump very high.
Same.
I was never going to be a gymnast. Like the physical stuff, I'm not strong. My bones are pretty aviary, but I can see what someone's doing online and know what's wrong. Like I can. Just can. And you know, I'm like, the laser goes right into the mistakes, which is horrible as a human being, but really good if you're trying to help someone fix something.
Yes.
So I'm really good at helping people align their intent with what they're putting out there in the digital space. And it's not content creation. Hire someone else for that. I'm not making your videos for you, but I can help you tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I also can connect you to pretty much anyone in the world.
Yeah.
My network is absurd because I've led a lifetime of connecting with people.
Yes. And it's interesting because going back to that friend in high school, when she said that she would leverage your dad for connections, you are a serial connector.
I am.
That is part of your job.
But I'm choosy.
Of course, right? As you should be.
But I am. It's true. There's no doctor I can't get to or don't know. And yeah, and also in business. Because when you know a lot, I collect people. I always have. I'm not very good at letting go. I never have been. So instead of like excommunicating people, I just keep bringing them on in. So just, yeah.
That's a good thing. It's a good thing. All right. My next question, it's really funny because I did say it already, but I was going to ask you if you were going to write another book, what would it be called? And I already just named your book. So
it seems it's going to be called The Anxious Optimist.
We need to put it out there so that nobody takes it.
Yeah. I dance around the idea of writing another book because I'm not sure that I want to. There's plenty of things that I have to talk about and plenty of stories that are absolutely bananas. But I think that it would gut me a little bit to have to write them. And somebody told me, and I don't remember who it was, but somebody was saying that it's better to write about your trauma once you've healed from it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's not everybody, but that's probably me. And so until I'm actually ready and fully through understanding certain things that have happened, I don't know that I can write about them. And while I don't believe that any of us have to share everything, I do believe that what we share has to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So yeah, that's boundaries and authenticity. So I'm just not ready to do it yet.
That's fine. I'm just saying, you heard it here first. You do when you are ready.
Yeah.
So last question, always the same. How do you ultimately want to leave your mark?
I have always wanted to make other people feel okay. I mean, that's really it. I want someone to see me kind of getting through this life, warts and all, messy, and let them know that they can do it too and that they're okay as they are. Just like I was saying before, I think there's so many people striving for this unattainable thing they think is called greatness, but it's all smoke and mirrors. Even the greatness, right? Like everybody has something incredibly powerful and special about themselves, but they also have deficits and areas in their lives that aren't so great. Nobody, there isn't a person on the planet that has everything the way that we think they do.
Absolutely.
Or they think they want. Nobody does. So I think that's, for me, it's to let people know that they're okay.
Well, I think you're doing that every time you publish an episode.
Thanks. I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. Thanks, Aliza.
You're welcome. Jenny, thank you for coming on Leave Your Mark. I'm honored to have you here.
Thank you for having me. You're so good at what you do and so smart. And
thank you.
Yeah, no, you are. It's fun to watch you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Leave Your Mark. If you want more career advice or tips on personal branding, make sure to pick up a copy of my new book, On Brand, Shape Your Narrative, Share Your Vision, Shift Their Perception. Want to land your dream job or kill it in your career? Don't forget about my first book, Leave Your Mark. If you want me to speak at your company or at an offsite, or if you need consulting services, please go to alizalick.com. I would love to connect with you there and on social media. And just remember this, if change doesn't hurt a little, it's not change. Keep on rocking.